Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Adrian Gardner to the broadcast. Adrian is a member of the Senior Executive Service and currently serves as the Director of the Information Technology and Communications Directorate and Chief Information Officer for the Goddard Space Flight Center, or GSFC, at NASA. As such, he's responsible for providing the GSFC workforce with the information infrastructure and tools that adapt and evolve to effectively and securely support management, science, research, and technology programs while developing, implementing, and operating specialized IT systems to support NASA mission planning and operation and providing systems that disseminate information to the public and that preserve NASA's information assets. Adrian is also chair of POC Working Group for Data.gov, co-chair of the Federal CIO Council Information Sharing Subcommittee, and he formerly held the role of Chief Information Officer for the National Weather Service. Among his many accolades, Adrian was awarded Temple University's IT Manager of the Year Award for 2012. Adrian is a doctoral candidate at the University of Southern California's School of Public Policy. He also holds a master's degree in public administration from USC and a Master of Science degree in Environmental Studies from Hood College. Adrian also has a Bachelor of Science degree in Biological Science and Ecology from the Tuskegee Institute. I recently caught up with Adrian in his office in Greenbelt, Maryland, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 2, Infrastructure, as Adrian discussed how GSFC IT manages massive amounts of data to support decision-making. Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as Adrian discussed the means by which he collaborates with internal and external partners, while also speaking about his process of aligning IT strategy with GSFC's broader strategies, as well as a variety of other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open-source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Gardner, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So, Adrian, for those of our listeners who may not be fully familiar, can you tell us a bit about Goddard Flight Center and its role within NASA more broadly?
Okay. So, Goddard is one of 10 centers across the nation that NASA has. Our primary focus is on, we're sort of the home to the nation's largest organization of combined scientists, engineers, and technologists that build spacecraft and instruments that focus really on the Earth, the solar system, and the universe. And so we're really focused on scientific sort of research, exploration, space exploration, and actually discovering life and other forms that actually we hope to eventually find out that there's somebody else out there beyond ourselves. And so, I mean, you know, we have scientists and engineers who are studying things that are either astrobiologists, astrophysicists, heliophysicists. So the whole gambit of scientific disciplines around our particular area of interest. In addition to that, we build things. So we're part science research center, part large factory complex. So have a lot of large clean rooms here, a lot of folks that, you know, from a standpoint of structural engineers, chemical engineers, the whole like, we build things from scratch that have never really been built before. And so there's a whole machining piece that and factory piece that you have to look at as you look at Goddard. So we're really this combination of factory, heavy process-oriented kind of organization, as well as then the science and innovation side. So it's actually a real wonderful place to work.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about your role as the head of IT? What role does IT play within this organization?
Right. So I'm the CIO here, which is the Chief Information Officer, as well as the Director of the Information Technology and Communications Directorate. What that means is I have a stake or have influence on all the IT that goes on the center. I don't own it all, but I influence it. And so I am a member of the program and project boards. So as we look at satellites and look at instruments during the project lifecycle, I sit on those boards or my staff does. The other role that I play is I am the authorizing official for NASA's mission network. So the terrestrial mission network, I actually manage that for not only Goddard, but for all of NASA. And then the last thing is, you know, as a CIO, I look at the nuts and bolts of things as well, desktops, laptops, mobile devices, and the like. One of the things I've really been focusing on is trying to get to some of the innovative practices that are out there that are currently, industry is currently taking on that I see relevancy here at the, on center. And so really have been focused on looking at how can we deliver more robust and more efficient IT resources to our scientists and engineers, really focused on mission accomplishment.
And how do you think about, from an innovation perspective, can you talk to us a bit about the process that you use? How do you think about seeking out the ideas that will become tomorrow's innovation and the role that information technology can play more broadly to bring those alive?
Yeah, we have sort of been taking on all comers, which keeps us very busy. And my, probably my staff last, and you know, they're very conscientious of my schedule and how I impact theirs. But I think we're trying to look at those technologies and the innovations that will impact the way in which we deliver. And so the approach that we've taken is sort of a mix of approaches that we have. One is sort of a fly before you buy kind of construct where we have folks come in and, you know, a lot of people say they do cloud. We're saying, well, let's come in and prove it and kind of kick the tires. And so one of the things that we really have been focusing on is on the federal side of things is really having the talent base to ask the hard questions of industry and really understand sort of the vaporware versus reality of things that can really add benefit. The second thing is sort of engaging folks or both private and public as well as open source communities across the board in the whole discussion around innovation. So looking at where public sector organizations are going, what are they are sort of experimenting with, looking at the open source community and look at from a standpoint of where is there sort of a nexus where folks have kind of said, I'm going to focus on eucalyptus and OpenStack and then hedging my bets on those things. The other thing is from a private sector standpoint is looking at where venture capitalists are investing, right? And so, you know, a lot of us focus in on Gartner. I think that's one good place to go. But I also think we really should be paying attention to this, the venture capitalist community and look what they're investing in from a standpoint of technology and innovations. And then, you know, saying, okay, if they're investing there, this might be a wise bet on our part to kind of look at some of these new things that are coming along. So if you look at Hadoop and things like that, where folks are heavily investing not only time, but products and services around that whole capability, and then its impact on big data and the like, those are things that resonate well with Goddard because we have a lot of data.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. In your description of your role, Adrian, you talked about some of the aspects of it that are specific to Goddard and others that cut across all of NASA.
Right.
And you also mentioned that Goddard is one of multiple parts of NASA.
Right.
How does collaboration happen across the whole?
You know, it happens through a number of mechanisms. One is through the agency CIO. So right now, if you look at the structure prior to my arrival, so I've been here a little under 3 years. Prior to my arrival, the CIOs reported directly through their centers. Now the CIO in particular reports to the NASA CIO. So one, there's sort of this strong alignment towards an agency view. The other thing is cross-collaboration across the centers. So there are centers that have like kinds of capabilities and like kind of missions that are very similar to Goddard. We do a lot of interfacing with them. So an Ames Research Center, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, folks that have sort of similar kinds of capabilities. We do a lot with the Manned Space Flight Center, so Johnson and Kennedy, from a networking standpoint, but also from a standpoint of, you know, having instruments and creating instruments that would particularly fly out from those centers. And so the way in which NASA kind of collaborates around capabilities is, I mean, we actually internally compete for capabilities. And so there is an opportunity where, you know, a particular requirement is sort of thrown on the table and the various centers from the standpoint of their competencies compete for that body of work and also partner to win. So it's much like the private sector. Sometimes you're at odds with other centers. Sometimes you're actually partners with them. And so it's very much a collaborative environment and a competitive environment all in one. So for me as a, you know, coming in as a federal CIO, it's very interesting to kind of sit in this environment and, you know, where other environments I've sort of been, you know, it's the feds and then the private sector, you kind of have your streamline of funding that automatically comes to you. That is the case in some ways as far as the general infrastructure facilities, so on and so forth. But for this new business, it's actually competitive. So it's sort of this mix of the, I think, of the best of competitiveness and collaboration all in one. So
that's really
I think that's why we're successful as an agency.
Yeah, it's in fact an area that I wanted to mine a little bit further, Adrian. I find it so interesting, as you've mentioned multiple times, the extent to which a lot of what you're doing is mirroring what's done in the private sector. And this whole notion of competition, which especially for the uninitiated might appear to be a bit surprising.
Right.
And having become a little bit familiar with some of the things that you've done, the sophistication of strategic planning and mm-hmm. planning more generally speaking, probably because of the competitive nature yep. of how you were seeking resources and the need to prove value that you're putting together. Can you talk a little bit about that process?
Absolutely. The underlying theme is really competitiveness, mm-hmm. right? I mean, so one of the things that we say as a center is we win one out of every three new business opportunities. So the real question is, what if that turns into one out of 10? And so my whole goal from a standpoint of looking at strategic planning is to say, how can IT contribute to maintaining our competitiveness as a center, not only within NASA, but across other federal entities as well, right? And supporting them. So, for example, we have partners with NOAA and DOD and other entities that we want to make sure that we're sort of the service provider of choice for the things that they want us to contribute on. And so I looked at IT from the perspective of saying, what are the attributes or the strategic contributions that IT can provide to the mission to ensure our competitiveness? So we looked at things like increased agility, modernizing our physical assets through IT, enhancing productivity, capturing the potential of big data, which is kind of a buzzword for everybody. It is a reality here. And then setting a stage for project management success. One of the things that we have here on center is that, I mean, we have a world-class project management organization, which is called Code 400, our flight projects division. World-class from the standpoint of building very technical and complex things. So what we've endeavored to do is actually benchmark that organization and bring that into the IT world, if you will. And so sort of mirroring their process in such a way that we get the full benefit of the experiences that they have, and then applying it to IT. Now, you don't have to, you know, a CRM system is not necessarily a satellite, so of course there has to be some tailoring in that, but still I think the principle is a sound one, and so that's one of the things that we've been really focusing on.
Really fascinating, and one of the topics that you briefly mentioned there is the notion of big data, and
yeah.
the fact that it is really a reality. If I have my statistics correct, I believe you collect 3.4 terabytes of data daily.
Yep.
So much of what you have spoken about would emphasize the timeliness and quality of your data is mm-hmm. critical to what you're doing.
Yep.
So it seems like in some ways the ultimate problem as well as opportunity from a big data perspective. How do you think about parsing through all of that to make sure
yeah.
that you're drawing meaningful conclusions as opposed to simply gathering all that data for
right.
no
apparent? And our, you know, our struggle is that, you know, and so we're primarily focused on Earth science. Mm-hmm. So not only are we focused on planetary science, but we're also focused on the Earth, right? And so climate, weather, so on and so forth. So there are some challenges that we have just in looking at, primarily we look at structured data. And so the complicating factor that's now happening is structured, unstructured, and semi-structured data it's all being used to support decision making. So in other words, you know, if it's the guy with his iPhone taking a picture of a tornado traversing the path of his front yard, that is still data, and it is still data that could lead to an informed decision by some decision maker downstream. We also see the hook in the radar that actually, you know, identifies it as a tornado, and that we would see off of our systems or NOAA systems or what have you. And so now the complicating factor is, how do we bring all these things together to create sound decision making and real-time decision making from a standpoint of emergency response teams, emergency managers, so on and so forth? And so it is a huge challenge for us. And then if you look at just the sheer volume, the volumes that we're talking about were just the structured data part. The unstructured part and the semi-structured now part is, you know, that trumps that by definitely a magnitude of, and I couldn't even, you know, try to guess at it. But, you know, I know that there are folks out there that are interested in our particular areas of interest, that being earth science. And how do we now support that whole decision-making process from a standpoint of data? Our center in particular, you know, we have some what we call distributed active archive centers. I mean, we probably have world-renowned folks as far as their ability to do data management within that environment. And so unlike a lot of other government agencies, we live and breathe by our data here. Now the complicating factor becomes, okay, now that we've got those data sets, as we begin to move more towards open access for those data stores, how do we match that up and create it and make it available in a consumable way that, you know, not necessarily packaged, but in a raw form where you could have citizen scientists and other folks take advantage of that, but still ensuring the quality of the data. And so there are some challenges that I think we'll have as a whole, looking at this whole dynamic of looking at structured data within the whole world of then unstructured data, and then sort of this nexus of semi-structured data And how do we, you know, provide it and serve it up in such a way that decision makers can make timely decisions? Because they may be overwhelmed by the data. And so that is our challenge. The other piece that I would say is looking at just the infrastructure required to support the movement of data. So I'm really talking about networks, right? And what are we going to do from a standpoint of investing in networks? So I think there are two parts of the problem that I want to look at. Is one is the network infrastructure. So how do I get the data from the compute to actually the way in which it's disseminated? How do I actually now also focus on cleansing data and understanding the quality of data and sort of putting that out to the consumer in such a way that they understand the information quality aspects that we've applied to the data sets? So for example, I may prioritize a structured data set because I know all the quality aspects of it higher than an unstructured data set, but I need to figure out a way to make that decision. And I think we're struggling with that as a community. It's sort of a volume, velocity, and quality kind of discussion.
And as you point out multiple times through the conversation, much of your data is open. The whole notion of open source and that tied innovation and making so much of the data you're collecting available broadly is obviously such a worthy and important cause that this organization serves. The flip side of that, of course, is it probably leads to security concerns that others might not have, or at least others might not have to the same extent as you would by virtue of that. How do you weave in security into this?
I mean, it's definitely a balance. And I think you have to, you know, as a CIO and in sort of an IT professional, you have to look at the culture of your organization and your agency. Because we are largely open, because we are largely scientific, and we do collaborate with foreign countries to create our capabilities. And so we've got to sort of adjust the security posture in that way. And so I think it begins with looking at the security posture of your agency and your data and understanding that. I think it goes back to, at the end of the day, sort of this whole notion of data management and understanding data security. We don't do that well as a government. We just don't. We sort of secure it at the system level. And we say, okay, now it's secured at the system level, so we're sure that nothing's going to get out, but things get out. And so now we're moving down to sort of data at risk and full disk encryption. And so looking at our most sensitive data sets in that way of really saying, I think it's more of a data management problem and a data labeling problem. We really now have to start to pay more attention to that. If you look at on the classified side, that's done very well. Now, if you look in an open environment, I think we have to get to a point where we put more focus in that area of data sensitivity and data labeling, and then really knowing where the keys to the kingdom sort of rest, right? And putting the security around that. But the rest of this needs to be largely open in order to promote collaboration, because scientists are driven by the need to share and the need to collaborate. And we've got to facilitate that through our IT systems, but we have to make sure that's done securely. And part of it is also having a discussion about security on the very front end. So one of the things that I'm endeavoring to do is really look at the pre-phase A part of the project lifecycle. So really the initiation concept design part. So before they start putting fingers to keyboard or machining, let's have a discussion about security. What at the end of the day, what is this particular capability going to yield from a standpoint of data? And now what kind of security controls do I need to put in place to facilitate that? And I think that's a much easier conversation if you're having it on the front end versus the back end. A lot of times we're brought in after something is already built, something's already processing data, and then you're saying, okay, well, how do I now secure this? Or you find out you put in place a security architecture, but you now need to bolt on additional security controls in order to, because something bad has happened. I think if we infuse those learnings on the front end of the project management lifecycle, I think that's huge. So I think there's a soft and a hard piece to it.
Final question for you, Adrian. We've talked about so many important IT trends from cloud computing to open source to security and big data, et cetera. Are there other IT trends that are of particular importance in your mind as you look forward to 3 years, say, down the road?
Yeah, I guess I'm observing this trend of if you look at innovation and its impact on the private sector and open source community, there are sort of these winners and losers. And one of the things that, from a trend standpoint, is, you know, trying to project who's going to win and who's going to lose, and then putting your chit down on the potential winner. One of the things that has pushed me to that notion is, you know, I look at the amount of online content that YouTube has, and then I look at the cable providers. And you see what YouTube is organizing into a channel format. the cable community has, and satellite community has cable, but they give it to you at a certain time, right? This is the programming time. You have to adjust to them. Well, now YouTube is organizing into a channel format where they have NASA TV, right? You could have a NASA channel. And I could pull down everything I would want on the Mars lander whenever I want it. So then it becomes sort of a demand market versus a supply market if I'm just going to supply this to you when I feel like serving it up to you versus I can pull it down exactly when I want it. If I want my child to sit down in front of the computer and actually, you know, learn everything about geometry, I can go to a channel for that and actually pull that down and actually somebody can take them through it versus staging them a year from now for going into geometry in the classroom. So I think there's going to be these sort of trends, societal trends that are going to drive the technology forward. I think visualization is going to be huge. I think the touchscreen technology is going to continue to get better and better and then lead to sort of new ways in which we convey information in the classroom as well as for decision support. I think that there are going to be trends from a standpoint of looking at network optimization where eventually I think network is not going to be an issue anymore. But I think we're still on the forefront of that. So, you know, we're talking about optical comm and those kinds of investments in technology. I think the other piece is going to be sort of this whole piece that I just sort of went through, consumer-driven technologies, where the consumer can really leverage a whole range of technologies and tailor them to their own individual needs. I think that is coming, right? And so if you look at the, you know, the iPhone now, you know, with apps, you're now tailoring your iPhone towards the apps that you're more apt to use, and you can individualize that. And so I think more things like that are going to happen from a standpoint of the way in which we interface with computers and IT in general. And so I think that whole interface, that human interface with iPads and iPhones and platforms in general is going to continue to evolve, right? And get closer, right? I mean, you think about how much now we rely on IT from the time that you wake up via the alarm on your iPad or your iPhone to the time you go to sleep, you're pretty much connected, right? So this whole connectedness piece, I think, is going to continue to grow. And I think the technologies that are agile enough to be part of that are going to be the ones that survive. The ones that are more closed and sort of proprietary are going to be losers in that game eventually, I think. I think you're also going to see a rise in open source, right? I mean, you know, before the government never really, I mean, we would think open source, that's the wild, wild west, right? Now, I mean, we're doing more with that community, right? I mean, so if you look at what we've done with Nebula and OpenStack and open sourcing that whole cloud platform, and then, you know, using the open source community to continue to develop it and refine it and make it better. I mean, I think you're going to see more of that happen across the board. So you're going to see a closer collaboration, not only from public to open source, but public to private to open source. I think you're going to see this triad where open source is going to continue to sort of rise in its prominence and then also be part of just the normal way in which we deliver IT.
What's also striking about your answer is so much of what you pointed to were sort of consumerization of IT facets, which would suggest that we should all be open to how we're using technology personally and translating that into potential business or work uses of one sort or another.
Yeah, I think it happens now. I mean, you look at the kids that the wonderful thing about Goddard is, we get a whole slew of interns every summer. So, you know, we had around, I think it was a little over 480 that were here this year. And this ranges from high school through doctoral students to master's students. And you see this whole change in the way in which IT is used and the way in which they use it in the workplace and how they perform work tasks. I mean, very different in the way that I would perform a work task, you know. And one of the things that I've always said is that, you know, I try not to have an original thought every day. Because if you think about the internet, it has a wealth of information out there where somebody has encountered the issue that you're trying to address. If they haven't, then you need to actually see if I need to actually, you know, my synapses need to fire and I actually then need to look and see if I really need to put some brain work around this. But I mean, I really, on a day-to-day basis, try not to have an original thought in that way. So I spend a lot of time as I encounter day-to-day issues, going to the internet like real time, you know, even in the middle of the conversation. And so I'm sure that, you know, students and kids now of this generation, that's commonplace for them versus, you know, we had to really sort of move into that way of thinking. I think that's automatically ingrained in them. So I think as IT gets more and more embedded into our daily lives, I think it's going to change the way in which we work and the way in which the workday actually looks. I mean, so, you know, folks should be able to work from anywhere at this point in time. You know, there are times, yes, when you need to have a face-to-face, but pretty much they should be able to have access to information from anywhere, any place, and from any device. And so I think we're moving towards that end state.
Wonderful. Well, Adrian Gardner, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing your perspectives. It's really been a great conversation.
You're welcome.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat uses a community-powered approach to provide reliable, secure, and high-performing cloud virtualization, storage, Linux, and middleware technologies. To learn more, visit redhat.com. Just listen to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Our editors are Chris Davis and Calhan Kuhl, and our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.